Hi, this is Jeff Siegel, the wine curmudgeon, and today I'm interviewing Matt Kane, who's the founder and president of Yellow and Blue, which brings in wine, produces wine. I guess, Matt, you can explain that exactly, from Argentina and Spain, and it's some of my favorite cheap wine. Thank you very much for doing this, Matt. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks for hosting me.
What I'm hoping you can maybe explain, given the vagaries of the of wine legalities and terminology, because technically you guys don't make wine, do you?
No, we don't. We buy finished wines from certified organic wineries.
Okay. And then you import it and distribute it in the United States.
Exactly. So what we do is we own an import company and we own the brand Yellow and Blue. And so what we do is we search all around. So as you say, we have wineries, two wineries we work with in Argentina. We work with a winery in Spain, and we're getting ready to start work with a winery in Chile as well. And what we do is we find high-quality wineries that make certified organic wines. We buy the made wines from them. We ship them here to the U.S. In big insulated steel containers to protect the wine. And then we package, as you know, in 1 liter Tetra Pak.
Well, we're going to talk about the juice box here in a second. I know you don't like it to be called a juice box.
I don't mind. I know. It doesn't bother me at all.
Talk to me, Matt. Tell me a little bit about, right now you've got the three wines. You've got a Malbec and a Torontes from Argentina. You've got a Rosé from Spain.
Exactly.
And as I've written many times, the Malbec in particular really impresses me for the value,
sure.
Especially, and it comes in a liter box.
Exactly.
Talk to me a little bit about how you can do this so inexpensively and produce such high-quality wine when I taste a lot of more expensive wines that don't seem to offer nearly as much value.
Well, I think the first thing is that we're looking for parts of the world where there is a lot of value. So that's why we work in Argentina, we work in Spain, and we work in Chile. My background, I think, as you know, is small production French wine and Italian wine. And given exchange rates and given those wineries, they're great wines, but they don't necessarily offer value. And so when I started the company, we started first to look in regions of the world where we could find value. Second, we buy the wines, and when we ship only wine. So we're not shipping half packaging, 20 pounds of glass per case of wine to the U.S. We ship only wine. And the packaging that we package in is lightweight, inexpensive to make, and inexpensive to produce. So the combination of buying wines in a region of the world where the value, shipping only wine, not heavy glass, which is expensive to make and expensive to ship, and packaging.
So, Matt, that the Tetra Pak and so forth and exchange rates and less valuable real estate, and that's all important. But can you talk a little bit about the Tetra Pak and the screw top and consumers in the wine business and why they seem to have such an aversion to these sorts of things? Because one reason, I do an internet radio show every couple of weeks, and the host is a fine woman and a big wine fan. Every time I mention a screw top wine, let alone a box wine, she gets all, let's see, what's the best way of saying this? Upset. Why are we so afraid of these wines?
Well, I think two things. One, the U.S. is still a relatively new wine culture. In other parts of the world, they don't so much worry about scores and things like that. When it's lunchtime in Italy and Spain and France, you have a glass of wine. And when it's dinner time, you have a glass of wine. And they're not so much concerned about what the format is. Here in the U.S., people look at wine as a bit more of a status symbol rather than as a beverage. And so what they know about wine are wines in glass with a cork that you put in your new wine cellar and things like that. But the reality is that something like 80% of the wine that's purchased at retail in the U.S. is drunk within a week of purchase. And the overwhelming majority of that's drunk within 24 hours. So with regard to that, the glass and the cork that you would use for wines for aging doesn't really count because all of the wine is consumed so quickly. So I think that's certainly part of it. The other thing is that the technology, whether it's what we use, which is Tetra Pak or Bag-in-Box, which is the other kind of alternative packaging format people mostly know, the technology really works, but there is a stigma associated with those And it's a very founded one because most of the wine up until now in alternative packaging has been a lot less than good. You know, most of the wine, a lot of glass wine, of course, is not that good either. But in for a winery, the overwhelming majority of what they do is they put the good wine in glass and then they say, okay, we've got all of the dregs here. What are we going to do with this? So, and then they put it in bag and box or something like that. So what we've done is basically take the technology, not use it as a gimmick, to sell more bad wine, but use it as a real technology in delivering the wine to the marketplace at a low footprint and at a low cost, and just simply put great wine in. There's really no difference at all in the way the grapes are grown, the way the grapes are harvested, the way the wine is made. It's just simply a difference of vessel between alternative packaging and glass. And so I think that's the, and it's a small hump. When I put the business together, I wasn't really sure. I thought, you know, is anyone really going to get this? High-quality certified organic wine in a box, a juice box, as you say. But the reality in the marketplace is that they are getting it. And, you know, we haven't really been in business that long. And in the face of the worst wine crisis economically in the U.S. in decades, we've expanded into 45 states. And so, you know, I think we fit a niche in the business with the economic situation, with all of the things happening. We just fill a niche in the wine business that up to date hadn't really been filled.
So. Yeah, I know. That wine niche, it hadn't been filled. Quality, cheap wine. It's hard for me to believe. You know, it's funny. I've been writing about wine for 20, 25 years, and people always made fun of me because I wrote about cheap wine. Now I'm hip and cool. It's almost too much for me to believe.
Of course. And, you know, and the other thing about the wine business is that there's not necessarily a direct relationship between cost and quality. You know, if you get a big company, you brand the wine, you put a big label on it, put it in an expensive bottle, and all of a sudden you charge a high price. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the wine is good. And so, you know, I've been in the wine business 15, 16 years, and that's the price, the quality ratio at the high end doesn't always really, really pan out.
I'm so glad to hear you say that.
Hey, what's it's true.
Yeah, I know, but I'm a voice in the wilderness sometimes. Yeah. In terms of organic, and I get this question a lot, Matt, in terms of organic, how much of a difference in the quality does it make, or is this not necessarily a quality issue but a sustainability issue?
That is a good question. I think it's both, you know. If you, whether it's tomatoes or grapes or whatever, you're in a system where from beginning to end you add chemicals and more chemicals and more chemicals. Yes, it's a sustainability issue, clearly, but I also think in the end that the, you know, Mother Nature has worked the same way for however long, and so the past 50 or 60 years we've decided we can outsmart it with all of the inputs into the soil. But I think in the end, that farming more naturally, again, whether it's tomatoes or corn or grapes or whatever, in the end, you know, I think you do come up with a better quality product, certainly.
Now, you had mentioned previously when we started that you were looking at Chile. Are we going to see some Sauvignon Blanc?
We're going to start working with, you know, all of the wineries we work with, I am particularly selective about the wineries that we work with. So I travel all over the place. I pick the wines, and we are rigorous about our selection. Whether the wines are $12 or they're $50 or $60, we want to be sure that the wine that we offer to the marketplace is high quality. So we work with two wineries in Argentina. And I hope you don't mind me expanding into the Chile question.
No, that's fine.
But we work with two wineries in Argentina. We get white wine from a winery in Cafayate, Toronto, from them. They're the first winery in Argentina ever certified organic. We get Malbec, as you know, from a producer in Argentina as well. They're in San Juan. They're certified organic and biodynamic. There are two wineries in all of South America that are certified biodynamic. So we work with one of the two. We work with a winery in Alicante in Spain who we get rosé from. They've been certified for years, and that's rosé of Monastrell and Syrah. We just started working with them this year. And in the late fall, early winter, we'll start working with a winery in Chile And they have been certified through the Kyoto Protocol. They're the only winery in the world that sells carbon credits into the marketplace because they produce more energy than they generate. So not only do I work with do they make great wine, but we find wineries that also are as interested in organics and sustainability as we are. So, yeah, so that's the plan.
Okay. So what, but can you give me an idea of what kind of wine you'll be bringing in from Chile?
Oh, in Chile. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. In Chile, the first wine we'll start with is Sauvignon Blanc. Okay. Yes. Sorry.
That's okay.
So circuitous. I never answered the
question. I ask people questions for a living. That's all right. Well, this it's great to hear that because one of the bad things over the last several years with exchange rate problems and so forth is that many of my favorite inexpensive Chilean Sauvignon Blancs are now $13, $12, $13, $14, and they're just not worth it. At $8, they were a great value.
Sure. If, you know, at a third more, they're not nearly as good.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, we don't anticipate any kind of price increases. So the Sauvignon, when we release it, would be in the same price range as all of the other ones.
Let me ask you this. You learned the wine business from one of the icons, Kermit Lynch. And for the people who are not familiar with Kermit Lynch, he's been bringing French wine into the United States and other European wines for longer than I think he cares to remember. All impeccable wines, all even if they're expensive, are tremendous values. And one of my guilty secrets is Kermit Lynch wines, especially white Burgundy, because he finds some really great, interesting stuff. What did you learn from Kermit Lynch, and what did you bring over to this project?
I think three really important things I learned from Kermit. One is to be rigorous in selection. Kermit, as you say, he's been in business since the early 70s, and he is one of the leaders in the movement in the U.S. to find small growers all across the world, bring them here to the U.S. and sell them into the marketplace. And so I think the first thing that I learned from Kermit was any wine isn't necessarily the best wine. You know, you need to look and search and not just give in, but wait until you found the right wine at the right price from a great producer. So I think selection is a pretty important thing. The second thing I learned from Kermit is protecting the wine. So Kermit created the entire concept of reefer shipping of wine to the U.S. so that the wine leaves the winery and arrives in the country the same wine. For us, the way that we ship, there is no technology that allows us to ship because we buy the wine before it's put into a package. We're essentially shipping bulk wine. And so the way most bulk wine is shipped into the U.S. is through a thing called a Flexitank. It's essentially a big steel container that you ship on a container boat with a plastic bag inside. You fill up the plastic bag, put it on the boat, and then ship it. That doesn't really, as you might imagine, especially crossing the equator, protect the wine so much. So we pay three times as much to ship an insulated steel container so that the wine leaves the winery and arrives at the packaging place temperature to protect the wine. And third, so I would say those are the two most important, but the third is also to be honest and forthright in your dealings in the business world, whether it's with the growers, your suppliers, or with your customers, to try to be as honest as possible and talk to them in a way so that they understand what you're doing. You know, what Kermit was doing 35 years ago is similar. You know, when he first started this business, there was no one buying wines in the Languedoc, no one buying wines in many of the places that are now more commonplace. And so I look at what we're doing is simply an extension of the same. Yes, people have heard of Malbec and heard of Sauvignon Blanc, but it's a new way of shipping and a new way of packaging and a new space in the wine business. And I think there are similarities there that certainly exist.
And most importantly, you don't have a cute animal on the label.
Well, and that's true, too. You know, there's a lot of alternative packaging that, as you say, is just simply a gimmick. Someone, a cute animal or, you know, a funny phrase. And we don't use it as a gimmick. You know, we're trying not to be too serious, but we don't use the packaging as a gimmick. We use it as a real solution to a whole host of problems that I think a lot of people in the wine business are going to need to address sooner rather than later.
Well, listen, Matt, thank you very much. I appreciate you taking the time to do this. It's been a pleasure.
No, same for me.
Well, listen, this is Jeff Siegel, the wine curmudgeon. May your glass always be full, and may you always enjoy who you're drinking wine with.